Welcome to the Infertility Podcast. I'm Candace.
And I'm Daniel. Grab a biscuit because we've got the tea on all things infertility.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review. This helps others find our podcast and get even more information about coping with infertility. Also, if you'd like to stay up to date with our story, you can follow me on Instagram at Operation Baby Bump.
Have a great topic for our podcast? Email us at thevanwades@gmail.com.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 2.
Hello.
Alright.
Alright, love. Can you hear that beautiful bird in the background? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That's our co-host. Bird Birdinson.
I don't think your deodorant works, actually.
What?
I don't think your deodorant works.
Mine?
Yeah.
For me?
No, for me.
I was going to say, my deodorant is fine. I never stink. You stink.
I know. Your deodorant is now not working for me, so I've been trying all-natural deodorants for quite a many years now, and nothing works. I tried Piper Y for a couple of years, and then, I mean, it worked great.
Is that the one you have to put on with your fingers?
Well, they have it in the pot, but they also have it in the stick now.
Oh, the gray one.
Yeah, and it stained all of our clothes, our pits.
That's true.
Like a charcoal-y color, which it's like, which is worse, stinking or having
stained
pit gray clothes. Pits?
Yeah.
I don't know, but
definitely stinking.
I've tried probably upwards of 20 different deodorants, and most recently I've been using Daniel's Tom's.
Really good
48
stuff.
Hours, and it's been pretty good. And then they came out with a ladies 48 hours, and I was like, oh.
It's so called Tomboys. Get it?
Good one.
Thanks. I think they're all weak.
But that did not work for me.
Yeah.
But at all. So, now yours is no longer working for me, and I just don't know what to do about it.
It's time to go to Old Spice.
No. I don't know. It's horrible because deodorants are the dirtiest, yeah. One of the dirtiest things that you could have.
Yeah.
With the aluminum and the fragrance and all of that. So it's important that I keep the all natural deodorant. But it's also important that I don't stink.
Yeah, that can be off-putting.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. And someone told me to put apple cider vinegar in there, and I don't see how that's going to make me not stink.
So now you're going to smell like a bag of chips. That's not salt good, vinegar is it? Yeah, chips. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what's worse.
I don't know. What's worse is The Bachelorette.
No. Don't say it. She's crappy as a person. And as a judge of character.
I can't believe.
But it's good TV. It's drama.
It's good TV, but she's crap.
Yeah, no, grade
A. We can agree on that,
can't
we?
Grade A crap. Like, the only reason she's on this show is because her parents have got people in high places. Because there was nothing in the actual Bachelor that made you think, oh, I know, she should be the Bachelorette.
No, she was not. I just can't stand her. I don't know why this guy's still hanging around. If you have a not, have a not?
Have a not?
If you have a knot.
You have a knot.
If you've not seen the episode from this week, she's down to hometowns, and she still is keeping Luke P around. And he's an idiot.
Yes, he is an idiot, but I will say this.
Okay, yeah, it's good TV.
Great TV, but if the guys just left him alone... Again. Stop talking to him. He would have been gone weeks ago.
That's not true.
It is true. I know guys, right? I used to be a guy, right? And I still, even
used
sometimes.
To be?
Yeah, even sometimes I'm like, I'm a guy. And
oh my gosh.
I think there's a lot of jealousy there because of the amount of attention she gives Luke P. And they're pretty hung up on it. And it cost Garrett this week.
I don't think it's the attention that she's giving him. I think it's how two-faced he is. He's one way to her, and he's manipulative, and he talks about winning, and he talks about getting the rose, and that's all he talks about in the house. And they see that. They see that discrepancy. And then once
he's with, I can't remember her name. Once she's with her, he's like, what is her name,
What is her name? Hannah.
Hannah. Once she's with Hannah, it's all about Jesus.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I was just in the shower, and like, the Lord spoke to me. And
I got this overwhelming.
Yeah. It's gross.
It is. It's manipulative.
It's
but
gross. And he's wearing he's that high on cross Jesus. Around his neck. Yeah. Just get a life.
I mean, that's coming from two Christians. It's a little bit sickening.
Yeah. It makes real life Christians look stupid.
But I don't hate him. Well, I don't hate him. You know?
I do.
I don't think you hate him. I think he's just one of those.
He needs to go.
He needs to kind of reevaluate himself.
But you know what? I don't like her, so if she ends up with him, good riddance.
But we know she doesn't end up with him because of the spoilers.
Oh.
You know? Like, she's all like, well, I have slept with people, and Jesus still loves me.
She's like, I beat somebody in a windmill.
In a windmill. You're probably not going to want to be with me. Hannah B. We know what the B stands for.
Hussy.
Yeah, dude. She is what we call a 10 to 2 girl in England. A 10 to 2 girl. Look it up.
Ay, Dios mío. All right, maybe we should move on.
I could talk about this for ages.
Well, today, we really wanted to talk about something better. Today, I wanted to talk about coping. Not just any type of coping, co-coping. I don't know if any of you have heard this term before. I've also seen it referred to as dyadic coping. So this concept of co-coping explains how couples cope together in adverse events. It's difficult to be a caregiver, right? When you're providing care entirely for someone who can't care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In my granddaddy's last few months of life, my mom was his main caregiver. He lived with her. There were hospice people that came. And my aunt also was a huge help during that time. And it was hard on both of them. It's physically intensive to take care of someone.
Emotionally draining.
It's emotional. When you're seeing your father deteriorate like that, It comes with its emotional and psychological difficulties as well. So it's kind of the whole picture. But what about when you're supporting someone emotionally and physically
mm-hmm.
when there's no end in sight? So like with my granddaddy, my mom and my aunt were prepared for him to pass away. They knew that there was an end.
It was inevitable.
Just trying to keep him comfortable.
Yeah.
In infertility, the future is very hazy. It might seem like when you're preparing for your IUI or your transfer
mm-hmm.
that it's going to work and things are going to be great. Or maybe you actually feel like you're going into some kind of unknown territory. Either way, anything could happen, as is true with life in general, right?
Yeah.
I think men often put their emotions aside to support their partner in hard times during infertility, even if there is a male factor in fertility in your particular situation. The woman is really going through the majority of the ups and downs, right?
You have the most important part, right? Your body's the body that's going to be carrying the child. We have 5 seconds of work.
Yeah.
3 seconds if you're me, but that sounds bad.
And I'm not going to act like I know all the intricacies of male factor infertility. I do know that there are procedures involved. I know that sometimes there are multiple procedures and they can be invasive, minimally invasive, but it's kind of a one or two and done type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for the women, we're going through a cycle and the cycles are back to back, right?
Yeah.
So one period leads to another, and, well, hopefully not, and ideally.
You know, before we started IVF, I was terrified because I had heard a story about doctors putting needles into the testicles and pulling out the sperm.
Yeah, that they have to do that.
Do they really?
And some, yeah. Jeez. If men have, like, blocked tubes or...
They put a needle in the testicle, yes, and pull it out?
Yes. And from my understanding, they're awake when that happens.
Oh, goodness. Listen, I think it's any just bros, a
local anesthetic.
Oh, any bros that are listening that had to go through that, Godspeed. That is... Yeah. Oh, my knees are trembling.
Yeah. It sounds really painful. But yeah, the woman is the one getting bloated. The women... The woman is the one getting bloated and having her period and feeling the weight pretty much of every single big fat negative. I think, you know, to men, the one pink line may not feel like it does when a woman looks at the one pink line. It's like when we look at it, I really don't know how to describe it. It's like, of course. Of course it's negative. And for the guy, it's like, oh, okay, we could try again. You know, we'll try again. I do think things are different for men.
No, I mean, obviously, they're 100% different. Yeah. I mean, every time you get that negative pregnancy test, you're right. For us, it's just like, okay, we go again. We bounce back. But for you guys, it's okay, I've got to put my body back through this entire process again.
Yeah.
With no guarantee.
And then it starts all over again. Ooh, yeah. I just felt a twinge. Is that implantation? Yeah. Oh, that spotting. Is that implantation? Yeah. And I think that we have this feeling that it's over before anybody else knows it's over because it's our bodies.
Yeah. You know what's usual and what's exactly. unusual. Yeah.
That's another crappy thing too, is when we do feel some kind of new sensation, we read into it. For the guy, it's just like, it's either a yes or no at the end.
It's and pretty binary.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know how you felt when I was going through those cycles.
I've never really thought about it, honestly. I think most of the time I was thinking about you. I'm a really easygoing guy anyway, so my feelings were always secondary. Not to toot my own horn. But I think... I don't know. I don't really think about it. I was always terrified. I am always the sort of person who would worry about everything. So I'm overprotective. You know, like, okay, the dog's getting anywhere near you. Like when you had just had your transfer, that was one thing that I was always like, get off, don't go near. Yeah. And you was like, we'll be fine. They're not going to do any damage. But in terms of my feelings, just anxiety, impatience, but like a continuous level of hope is what I would say.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I mean about co-coping, is it's the idea that we're both coping but in different ways, and the way you cope affects the way I cope, and the way I cope affects the way you cope.
100%, especially when you look at your coping method for when something goes wrong is distance. Like, you like to... Yeah. Like, if you get... Stub your toe, for example.
Don't talk to me.
Don't talk to you. Don't try and cuddle you.
I'm going... Oh, and you're like, oh... And then you try to come over to me, and I'm like, get off of me.
Get off of me. Or, like, anything going wrong, your coping method is... I've got this. I'm independent. I do not need you to put your arm around me.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, I would go as far to say that even asking, hey, you doing okay, is a trigger for you. That frustrates you. I'm the opposite, right? I'm the complete opposite.
It frustrates me because you also ask if I'm okay if, like, I drop a pencil on the floor.
Yeah.
You're right, man.
Yeah, I do. like if I
dropped a pencil.
But that's an English thing, right? Like, we're so, like, quintessentially polite about things. It's like, oh, that was a bang. What should I do? Ignore it? Or go, all right, everything all right over there? All right, how's it going? But,
yeah, it's
and then
true.
I'm the complete opposite when it comes to things. If I hurt myself or something goes wrong, give me a cuddle, right? Give me a hug. Put your arm around me. Give me a kiss on the forehead.
Yeah.
Mess up my hair and say it's going to be all right, kid.
And I think that has a lot to do also with your love language.
Yeah.
And our love languages are
hugely
polar
different.
Opposites.
I speak Mandarin Chinese and yours is Latin. Like, we couldn't be any more different.
Yeah, it's very different. But I do think it's important to recognize, like, I can recognize what his coping mechanism is and his love language, and he knows mine. Well,
I don't like it.
After nearly 10 years, sometimes he acts like he doesn't know.
I don't like the fact that your love language is that sort of independence, because when we have kids...
Because you feel like you're not needed?
No, more so I just don't like the fact that you cope with these things on your own. It's just a miserable existence, in my opinion. If you don't have people to support you, like, directly then and there, it's lonely. It leads to other things. And, like, having kids, when you eventually have kids, you don't get an option to choose your love language. Those kids will determine, if you're in a bad mood, you're in a bad mood.
Yeah.
So you have to adjust. Like, I'm going to have to adjust so much when eventually we become parents, right? I can't listen to the music I listen to now because there's cuss words.
You can't say the things that
you say. I can't
say
the things. I can't say the jokes. You know, so everything has to change. And I think one of the things that will have to change eventually for you will be your love language. You're going to have to be, you know, adjust.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see.
We'll see.
But you remained really outwardly positive during our treatments, and I mean, even though we were crapped on every turn, every single appointment, every canceled cycle, every failed cycle, did you really feel that positive, or were you actually just putting on a brave face?
Bit of both. Terrified, to put it into a boxing terminology, I felt like we were in the 12th round. That's the last round. And I just received a punch.
Thanks for spelling it out, because I didn't know if you
thought about it. And I feel like I'd received a punch in the temple and I was on my knees. So I was always overly positive, because there's no way that someone can go through what we've been through and not get a positive at the end of it, in all honesty.
But we didn't every single time. And that's, like, I remember you saying, you know, something good's going to happen to us. I can feel it. Like, mm-hmm. something good is going to happen. And I didn't believe you, because...
No, I didn't.
The pattern that we had gone through and the history of our, you know, crappy infertility, in that nothing good has ever happened.
No.
Nothing. It's exciting when you do, like, when we did a round of IVF and we would, mm-hmm. you know, go through that waiting for the call, the embryologists and this and that. And then you end up having... Sorry, we had three the first round, having three normal embryos, and they're all girls. And it's like a celebration, because it's like, my dreams have come true. I'm going to be a girl mom and blah, blah, blah.
And I'm already packing my bags to get out of it. I'm like, no, nope, not another one of them.
And then we lose them all.
Yeah.
And then you go through another two rounds, and then we get more embryos, and that's a celebration. And then it's... canceled cycle, failed cycle. And it's just the same thing over and over again. And how can you feel like something good's gonna happen? I mean, you, in your mind, you say it can only get better.
Yeah.
But that's not really true, because it's like,
I mean,
you would hope it could only get better.
Yeah.
It certainly feels like it couldn't get any worse.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the stability of your positivity, because I needed it anyways. Even though I didn't really appreciate it at the time, looking back, one of us needed to have
a positive
outlook.
Yeah, you did. Even though I was extraordinarily positive through this whole thing, the funniest thing was you were so honest with me. Like, I don't want to hear that right now, Daniel. I don't want to hear that positivity, because all we've been done, all that's happened is we've been crapped on.
Yeah. And
I totally understood it. It wasn't going to change how I felt, though, right? I was convinced that we were going to get positive news at the end of this, even if it didn't come via our crappy clinic. I was convinced we'd get positive news.
I guess I was just hoping to see, and I think I did see this after our first round of IVF and all of the embryos we lost, that huge conversation we had about, do we pursue more IVF or do we adopt? Do we roll the dice and spend all this money doing more IVF and then that fails and then we can't afford to adopt? And it was one of those, I don't want to say knock down, drag out fights, but it was we were on two different pages. And I think that was the first time that I saw you show any type of anger towards the situation. Like, I don't want to be having this conversation because I don't want to be in the situation. This sucks.
Yeah, no, I agree. I remember that conversation distinctly because I was going through a really busy period at work, and I was openly failing at one thing at work that I'm not good at failing. Like, and it was something I was struggling with, and then that compounded it and made it worse. I was already in a bad mood, and then we're going through this situation, and it was so frustrating to hear, this isn't working, so now we're going to have to do this. So I'm like, okay, whoa, I don't fail at things, and now I'm failing at two things in the space of 2 days. What is happening? And I was really angry because the option, obviously, of adoption, I wasn't there yet. You know, I have all the respect in the world for people who can adopt, because it shows a complete level of selflessness that I'm not at yet, right? I was determined to have my own DNA. And especially when a doctor has said to us there's completely nothing wrong with either of us.
And that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have all the money in the world, and we were sitting there faced with having to spend another
30, 40 grand, whatever.
Thousands and thousands of dollars that we didn't have. And it was just like,
I'm not going back to stripping, is what I said on several times.
But I think that men, when partners are going through infertility, and I can't speak about same-sex couples because I honestly don't really understand the dynamics of a same-sex couple, because they're all different. Mm-hmm. Like, I have plenty of gay friends that have a partner and they are both really manly. Like, neither one.
We sound like such old people right now.
I'm just saying.
Well, those gays, they sounded manly.
Well, I just mean, like, I can think of couples that are both really masculine, and I can think of couples that are both really feminine. And so I don't know, like, when it comes to gender typical emotional states, and I certainly can't shed any light on lesbian couples, because I think I only really know one lesbian couple. So, and I can't even imagine, like, the emotional dynamic for two girls.
Yeah.
I just don't know. But I can say that in heterosexual relationships, generally, gender typically, men stifle their emotions, and whether it's a pride thing or whether it's in the interest of their partner, you know, I think women obviously are much more emotional, and so they put their feelings aside. And like I said, we had been going through those treatments for
2 years.
Well, at the time I'm talking about, after our first round, we had been going through it for almost a year.
Was it really?
Actually, it was over a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, we started...
It was over a year.
Our first appointment was November 2016.
So it was December.
Was it really?
Yeah. I just mean, like, it took a whole year for me to really see some type of a emotion out of you, which is good, because we can't both be falling apart. And I was definitely not,
no,
you know, my best during those years.
But it's completely understandable. Like, although you think I was completely stable, I actually had a really bad Cadbury's cream egg addiction through that period. I was smashing them.
Don't say through that period, because you just bought 50.
48, about actually.
When Easter was over, so let's call a spade, okay?
It was 48.
You're stupid. You're so dumb.
They're so delicious.
Okay, so you have Cadbury cream eggs. Women have Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, we found this amazing community, and up until recently, there have been, like, no men on there.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I'm still... Right. I did buy 48.
Okay, let's move on now. I've been really happy to see some men on there documenting their journey and talking about what them and their wives are going through. In the beginning of our journey, and I talked to you about this the other day, but you weren't really keen on being too sherry.
No.
Sherry?
It just is not the sort of person sharing. I am. Yeah.
And up until I started my Instagram, we were really private. And actually, my Instagram was private for a while because our families didn't know that we were going through it. And we had kept our struggle private for many years from our families and our friends.
What was it in the end? From the time we first started to try and conceive, it was about 6.5 years, 7 years.
Yeah. In the beginning, when we were starting to try, they knew we were trying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mother-in-law bought me this beautiful Kath Kidston diaper bag.
Yeah.
When we had first started trying, and it was an exciting time because it was like, oh, we're starting a family.
Yeah.
And we had no idea, of course, what was going to happen, but we told people, and then it just kind of, like, after our ectopic pregnancy, people just kind of stopped asking.
But I know why.
Yeah.
When we actually went through the ectopic pregnancy, you closed yourself off entirely. Not only did you close yourself off, but you were very aggressive with those that tried to get close to you. And you know, I distinctly remember people asking me how you were doing because they'd been snapped at by you. And I'm not saying that was wrong. Like, you were in a really bad place. Your family.
If you're talking about right after it happened, yes. Because, again, we've discussed, like, I am the type of person who needs space when something happens. And I think I made that clear that I needed space.
Yeah.
And then they would say, can I stop by?
Yeah,
can I bring you something? And I'm like, I need space.
Yeah.
That means give me space. Don't text me. Don't call. Do not stop by. That means no offense, but that's just how I personally cope with things.
Yeah. It's not you. It's me.
It is. And then it becomes them because they don't respect that boundary that I need in place, because being alone makes me feel safe. And I don't like crying and cuddling and, you know, someone hugging me while I cry. Like, to me, that is just cringy. And that is not my MO.
Basically, what she's saying is she's dead inside. And
I can agree with that partially. But
but that was what drove the fact that after that, everyone made a conscious decision that the worst thing you can do is ask you questions.
Well, I can't say that I'm sorry. I can say I'm sorry if I hurt people's feelings. I can say I'm sorry for hurting people's feelings, but I cannot say I'm sorry for setting that precedent, because I need space.
Yeah.
And I feel like my family knew me well enough to know that, you know, when I'm a teenager and something bad happens and I go to my room, like, that's how I want it. And I know that's a real teenagery thing to do, but then when that's my behavior for the rest of my life, like, that's no different. And I understand, because they were grieving too, and they needed to cuddle me. They needed to cry with me. They needed to see me and see that I was okay.
Yeah.
But I was miscarrying a baby, or a placenta because it was ectopic, I guess.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, and that's fine. But that's where it stems from.
Yeah.
It stems from there.
And I'm happy. I'm happy that it, like, it going back to us being private, I'm happy that nobody asked for many years because it got worse. It got worse for us. Like, if it can get worse after an ectopic, I think, you know, when you keep trying and keep trying and keep trying, and then you finally get to a point where you're like, well, I guess we're those people that need IVF.
Hi, I'm Daniel. This is Candace. And we're infertile.
I guess we're those people. Like, I guess we are that couple that people know that did IVF.
Yeah.
And that's, like, unfair. Like, when everybody else is buying their house and we're sitting here, like, hopping apartments and, you know, like, it's unfair to me.
Stuffing our faces with cream eggs.
Eating cream eggs for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Can't eat any more eggs. They're so delicious.
So, yeah, I'm happy that nobody asked us that. That's great. But I think you really came around. I needed that support. And despite how private we were and how much space I needed, what I needed was support from people who actually understood.
Mm-hmm.
I needed people that I could identify with, who could identify with me, and who I could, you know, form friendships with.
Yeah. You needed a squad.
Yeah. I needed a squad.
Squad.
And I found that on Instagram, and I didn't expect to find that. It just turned into friendships and a community, and it was amazing. But for men, you go to work and you do your thing and you come home and it's like, oh, we're still infertile. So you have a level of being able to have some distraction, but you don't really have that outlet. No. You don't really have that outlet that I have.
Thank goodness for sports. That's, you know, that was my stress reliever, but normally causes more stress. So
I think you branched out. You're out of your, you know, this podcast is out of your comfort zone.
Hugely out of my comfort zone.
But I know you do it for me.
Yeah.
And I know you do it for the people out there that are listening who message us and say just how much it means to us.
Yeah.
That we're not alone. You know, we can... I can identify with you, and like my husband loves listening to your husband because he feels like men don't have a voice. And so, I mean, there are plenty of infertility podcasts out there.
Yeah.
And they're primarily done by women.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's like one, maybe two that have the men involved.
I wouldn't do this podcast if I didn't feel a responsibility to do it, because we live in a day and age where, slowly but surely, a man's voice is being drowned out by different groups and whether
feminists.
You know, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but what I am saying, it's important that every gender, regardless of what you identify as, has an equal voice, especially when it's in something that men openly do not discuss, and that is fertility. It's embarrassing for us. It is something that impacts your masculinity because you feel like, oh, I'm not a man, I can't get
my wife pregnant.
And even
if it's the wife's problem, it still
absolutely
probably makes a man feel inferior to other men in some way.
The difference between me and most men is I've grown up around very strong women, so I'm good at expressing myself both from a man's standpoint and a female standpoint. So this isn't easy for me to do this. And if I had my choice, I probably wouldn't speak about this sort of thing. But these are the cards I've been dealt. And I think it's important that there's an equal amount of voice in these things and people can actually feel that they trust someone who's gone through it.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So there was a paper published back in 2008... and they found that the way one partner copes directly affects the way the other partner copes. And I mentioned this earlier. A partner's use of active avoidance coping was related to increased personal, marital, and social distress for men and women. I mean, that makes sense to me. And they categorized active avoidance coping as, get this, avoiding pregnant women and children. which, guilty.
Yeah, I think we all are, right?
Yeah, I think...
I stopped myself from going to a baby shower at work because I was like, I just don't want to be around there. Baby showers
if you don't want to. I also, like, pass, and I still do this, I pass women who are pregnant, and I'm like, oh, good for you.
Oh, you're pregnant. Oh,
how good.
Oh, my God. Oh,
congratulations.
You do that. I don't. I think I still feel a tinge of jealousy when someone's like, we're pregnant, and it took 4 weeks, and you're like,
and you're like, oh, it shut did. Up.
4 weeks.
Congratulations.
Great.
I know, I still feel that way, too, when people announce their pregnancy and they're not one of us. Yeah. I'm just like, shut up.
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth.
Pam.
Pam. Pammed?
Pammed.
I think I can help with the panned thing. There's a D at the end.
If you haven't seen Step Brothers, that is a direct panned. Quote.
We're actually thinking that any daughter would be named Panned going forward.
Pan? With a D?
With a D.
Anyways, so they categorized active avoidance coping as avoiding pregnant women and children, keeping their feelings regarding infertility stressed themselves, and turning to outside activities such as work to take their mind off of infertility. Which, guilty! I mean, can anyone listening identify with this finding? Like, that you feel that the way you and your partner cope affects each other. And I also think that there's a healthy balance between avoiding that constant rumination of, oh, I'm infertile, oh, the cycle failed, oh, the miscarriage, and the constant rumination of that. But I see what they're saying about constant avoidance. You don't want to constantly avoid those feelings and those discussions with each other, because you still need to be communicating and all of that type of thing. At some point, you need that support.
Mm-hmm.
And who better to support you than your partner, the person who's going through it with you.
Your handsome British husband.
Yeah, exactly. Sees you every day and sees the state you're in every day. And you need to talk about it, especially as a couple.
Yeah, I agree.
My biggest takeaway from all the research that I've done and co-coping is that you should definitely remain on each other's side. So stay a team and find a balance between addressing the stress and doing other things to take your mind off of it. If you choose to do other things to take your mind off of it, make sure that you're being productive and staying and keeping that healthy balance. I think we've talked about this before in our episode about self-care. Take a nap. Yeah. Take a nap every day if you want to. Sleep in every day if you want to.
Get a tattoo.
Don't
do that.
You say that. Oh, Ramsey. What I was saying was, we don't want to be self-destructive during this time.
No.
I have to say that I have been self-destructive a lot. And that has been a huge coping mechanism for me. The treat yourself coping.
Treat yourself.
Is my favorite coping style.
Like bit of cocaine here.
No.
Oh.
Eating my favorite food every single day.
Basil.
That
Thai
costs,
food.
You know,
$20. $20.
Having no regard for my health because it doesn't matter what I do because I'm infertile and it doesn't matter if I eat this or that or the other. It doesn't affect anything. And it really doesn't, because I survived off Chick-fil-A for the second and third IVF rounds. And that was our most successful rounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the first round, I was eating clean. I was eating salad every day, all organic ingredients, taking all the supplements. And it didn't matter a lick.
Yeah.
It just didn't. I mean, To an extent, it does, but I was very self-destructive. But I will say, have some compassion with each other going through this. And I'm always trying to tell women when they're down on themselves, I say, have some compassion with yourself, you know, give yourself some grace. It's okay that you didn't work out all week. It's okay that you had the coffee all week. It's okay. Just forgive yourself and move on. Whatever that means to you, moving on.
Yeah.
But in co-coping, I would say one of the other big things is having compassion for each other, especially when you're going through infertility. I mean, it makes such a huge difference in personal recovery for someone to be compassionate towards you during your difficult time. And I know that, Daniel, when we were going through the years of infertility, I could count on probably two hands the amount of times I cooked. That includes Thanksgiving and Christmas meals, probably.
Do you remember the year when you were just like, I'm not cooking this year?
Yeah. And you were like, what?
What? I get two dinners a year. This is one of them.
I mean, you never made me feel bad about not cooking. And when I didn't do laundry for 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, you never made me feel bad about that. And I appreciate that, because going through that time was difficult enough.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I would have done if I realized I was married to a huge prick, you know, that made me feel like even worse crap about myself.
We see it, don't we? We see people.
Yeah.
Like, arguing on their freaking stories and things, and you're like, guys, you ain't gonna make it.
Yeah, I just kind of shake my head and go, Godspeed.
It's difficult. Everyone eventually is going to get pushed their limits and they're going to snap about something, but it's important that you, like, contain it correctly and just get back to a point where you're on the same team again.
I'm not sure I provided you that much support during that time, because
I really need it, though.
I barely had the strength to support myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I was going through school and all of that stuff. And so it was so difficult for me. I guess you had to be strong for both of us. And that was really important at the time. And I think moving forward, I think I just need to make sure that, you know, that was then and this is now. Like, that was a really hard time in our lives. And, like, this is a different time. And so maybe I need to be more supportive towards you.
No, I don't know about that. I think we have a dynamic that works, and
I know, but you still need that support too, like you do, whether you think you do or not.
Yeah.
And this is kind of my main point of this whole episode, is that when you're coping together, there will be times where one of you is lifting the other up, and it just happens that for you carry the bulk of the weight during that time. But it's important as women that we find those little moments of strength where we can make sure that our men are knowing that their feelings matter too, and that those lines of communication are always open, because they're so supportive of us in most cases. I see some really just amazing couples on Instagram, and it makes me so happy that even though these women that I've connected with are going through such a crap time, that they have a man, you know, they've got a man over there, like, holding them up.
Or, you know.
Or a woman.
Yeah.
Holding them up through this time. So, I think a fear of mine, though, was deep down, like, in the sick, dark corners of my mind, that you would just get fed up of having this infertile wife and bail out. I think that's a natural fear, because I was failing in every aspect of a wifehood at that time.
I mean, it crossed my mind like 11 times.
11?
11, yeah.
That's very specific.
While I was counting. I think when you make a commitment to someone and you go through what we've been through, not just through fertility, but just through the point of, you know, being able to be together, immigration and things like that, you only do that if you're dead serious about it. And in all honesty, regardless of where we are now, yeah, nothing would have changed for us. We've got a good dynamic. We're supposed to be together, and my mum likes you too much.
Yeah. She does. And if you left me for some other bird,
oh gosh,
she'd probably never talk to you
again. She wouldn't. She would not. But seriously, though, you know, when you know is that famous statement, right? When you meet the one that you want to be with. So this was immaterial to our relationship. This is just something that we've been through, like losing a job, like having to go through anything else health related. It is what it is. This is just one of the many ups and downs that you're experiencing in a relationship. So it doesn't cross your mind to just bail out.
And this is kind of the unsolicited advice that I've given to these little chickens that are 20, that, you know, these interns that I get at work, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to go to college. And then like Nathaniel and I are going to like get married. I just made up that name.
That's a cool name.
Nathaniel and I are going to get married, and we're probably going to have a boy and a girl, and like probably live on Isle of Palm, you know, beachfront. Mm-hmm. And then the next week she comes in and she goes, I just realized that I don't have like the credits to get into the school here. So like, I think Nathaniel and I are going to have to break up. Like, I just don't know if, like, I'm going to have to go to school out of state. And I said, listen to me. Life gets so much worse.
Dang.
I said that. I was
do
like,
do what you can, but I'm afraid it gets so much worse.
I was like, honey.
Honey.
I understand that this is groundbreaking for you and, like, earth-shattering, but life sucks. Like, you have no idea what could be around the corner. So practice now. No, I did say this. I said practice now with being presented with an obstacle and problem solving.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, here's what's going to happen in a practical way, because you never know what's around the corner.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't.
A meteorite could strike Earth and we'd all be dead.
Can you imagine, you know, in Armageddon when they're like, it's headed this way and like we need people to go and like blow it up so it bypasses the Earth. Like, wait, what?
Let's get some people who know how to drill.
Like,
to do it.
But it's like you could be faced with anything at any time, and you just,
yeah, it's a kind of negative outlook on life, though. What, no, the actual
it's not.
Response?
It's really not a negative outlook. It's more of like,
if you stay realistic,
don't freak out. Shit happens.
Yeah, but we've all been that age, and we understand that that is probably the biggest thing that's ever happened in their life. It's all about perspective and scale.
I know, and I'm just trying to say, if that's the biggest thing that's happened in your life and you're 22 years old, I don't know what to tell you. It gets worse. What do you want me to say?
Not that. That's not what I would say.
It gets worse.
It gets
worse.
That's
all I have to say.
Welcome to Candace's Psychology Hour. So you've been dealing with something bad. Well, let me tell you this. It gets worse.
I just think people should be positive and be happy, yeah, but also be realistic and realize that it's not all rainbows. And
it gets worse.
The little bubble you live in when daddy's paying your rent and you don't have a job and your school's paid for and everything, that comes to an end eventually. I just, the generation that's coming up, I know we're getting off on a tangent,
no,
but
this
I just
is so
think
depressing.
The generation that's coming up, the 20-year-olds nowadays, oh Lord, help me, help me.
Oh God.
Anyways, we can wrap this up now. I just went off on a tangent.
I like 20-year-olds. At least one of the stars.
What do you mean? That sounded...
That did sound creepy, didn't it?
That sounded really
I love
creepy.
20-year-olds. I hang around at the local discotheque looking for 20-year-olds.
I don't think 20-year-olds go to the discotheque.
Isn't that just a disco? Like a nightclub?
Yeah, I guess. Anywho. Thanks for listening.
Oh, God. It gets worse.
It gets worse. Oh, and spoiler alert, our podcast gets worse.
It gets worse. Next episode, we're going to talk about the effects of being an idiot and how...
Okay, let me end with saying this.
Please.
Okay? if you've gone through infertility,
yeah,
it gets better.
It gets better. Okay? There you go.
It gets better. If you have been crapped on so many times, time and time again, disappointment after disappointment, I promise you, maybe it's not tomorrow, maybe it's not the next five cycles, but I promise that it gets better eventually. And if you can just hang on to that lifeline and grab on tight, don't let go, it gets better.
Gets better.
But if you're 20 and you haven't, it gets worse.
It gets worse. Jeez and rice, I tell ya.
Thanks for listening. I'm Candace.
And I'm Daniel.
And I.
Good night.